Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Saturday, April 6th, 2008, and this is show number 144. Well, you guys all know that I do this show for the love of it. You know, I can't stop talking about this technology geek stuff anyway. And having an audience who actually wants to hear it is just a benefit to my friends and family who are just so relieved that I have an outlet for all this great information. However, there are costs associated with creating the show, and of course, my insatiable appetite for gadgets and software to be considered. So if you find some spare change lying around in the seat cushions of your couch, I wouldn't be offended at all if you pushed that PayPal button on my website and maybe threw a few bucks my way. I gotta tell you, Ron Proto wanted to send me a donation, but he was a little concerned about using PayPal, which I know some people have problems with. Anyway, he asked me if there was a different way he could donate. I noodled on that for a bit and then suggested an Amazon gift certificate. You know, they have gadgets and software there, so it's perfect. And Ron sent me a very generous donation through Amazon. I wanted to thank him on the air because it was more than just change left in the seat cushions. You know, while I was writing these notes up too, though, I got an email from David Hill, actually a PayPal notification, that David Hill had gone online and donated to the No Silicast. Now, what's up with that? Is he actually watching me type my notes? How did he know that? I'll type, give me $1 million next time if that's what's going on here. Anyway, I sure would appreciate a little donation now and then if you find some spare change, and if you don't, that's okay too. Well, evidently, I hit a chord with many of you on my Get a Life rant from last week. I got a bunch of emails, but also two of our listeners actually blogged about it on their blogs. Remember Martin from Germany? Remember he gave me a bunch of help in video encoding, and he has an alarmingly distracting Flickr feed, and he also helped us understand why we want Linux applications ported to the Mac? Well, he really resonated to my Get a Life speech, so go check out his blog and read what he thought about it at blog.grummel.at. Megan Duffy is a nurse, and she has a great blog called Not Nurse Ratched. You remember that from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? Well, anyway, great movie. But anyway, she joins me in my I'm not going to take it anymore viewpoint on the harassment we geeks get for enjoying our online life. It's a great read. Be sure to read all the way to the end in what she says. And finally, Rose from Australia was so moved by my speech that she sent in an audio file.
G'day, Al. It's Rose from Hobart, Tasmania. Currently home to Leo Laporte. Yes, that's right. I said Leo Laporte. How excited am I? Very. But really, the point of this soundbite is to discuss your rant from last week, Get a Life. Now, my brothers can lay on the couch all weekend, watching the TV, watching motorbikes go round and round and round and round and round and round. But I tell one person that I sleep with my MacBook, and I'm the weirdo. A guy at work asked me how long I'd had the MacBook, and I replied, "We're so in love, it feels like we've been together forever." Again with the weirdo look. Not that I sleep with my MacBook anymore. These days it's the Emacs in the study, the MacBooks in the sitting room, and the iPod Touch is on the bedside table. So the alarm goes off, I hit the button, I put my glasses on, I fire up the Touch and read my emails. Is that weird? No, seriously, Al, is it weird to sleep with your computers? I don't think it is. And in fact, right here, right now, I'm coming out of the closet. I'm an Apple fangirl and proud of it.
Well, you go, girl, Rose. I'm telling you. You know, you really do have a way of putting things. I say, geeks unite. We aren't going to take it anymore. We do have a life, and it's online. Well, anyway, I sure hope you like Bart's special video on HDR. It was more of a challenge than I thought it would be to put an introduction and an exit screen on the video. I am not a video specialist, as I'm sure you've figured out by now. That's why I do audio. Audio is hard enough. But anyway, I thought it might be interesting to talk through the process I did because a whole lot of tools got used, some that helped me and some that completely failed me. Okay, so Bart sent me an MOV file, right? And I wanted to put my logo up front and in back and to lay my voice and the No Silicast music on top of that. I started by creating an MOV with ScreenFlow. put my logo on screen, popped it into full screen mode, and then I just talked into the mic. So far, so good, but ScreenFlow wouldn't let me put my music on top of that, or at least as far as I dinked around trying to figure it out. All right. I thought I might have to give up the music, so I just wanted to continue with that test, so I pulled the MOV file into iMovie, along with Bart's movie, laid them end-to-end in the timeline, and then did a share to MOV. It looked awful. It wasn't high resolution at all. It was just, I mean, his screen pics and everything, it looked awful. All right. So next I remembered that QuickTime Pro can actually stitch videos together. You open two files, you do a select all in one, copy, and then switch over to the second file. You move the cursor to the front or the back, depending on your preferences, and then you select edit, add to movie. Ta-da! Two movies in one. It's really, really easy. It's a wonderful way to stitch movies. Okay, so now it seems I have kind of a process down, but I still have to figure out, I want to get my voice and music both on top of the logo image. So I used Wiretap Studio to record my own voice doing the introduction and exit words, and I saved both of those out as uncompressed AIFF files. Steve thought maybe there'd be a better way to do a better job with iMovie, and he was pretty sure I could get all three elements to play nice together. My audio, the soundtrack, and the logo. We weren't able to just pull my JPEG in, which was annoying, but by pulling it into iPhoto first, we could bring it into the clip bin and then into the timeline. But guess what? It looked horrible. Really pixelated and nasty. Steve dinked around a bunch, and finally he found a menu pick that said, "Show full video resolution." And that seemed to straighten things up nicely. Really looked good. Well, it seemed to help. At least the picture looked good. But now the deal is I have to drag the image. You kind of take the image and you stretch it to the length of the audio so that it lasts the whole time the soundtrack is going on. In fact, the video will actually stop if the picture stops. So no problem. I'm just supposed to be able to click on it and drag it out. But for some reason, in iMovie, it kept snapping back to the original size, or it would just move the scrubber head for some reason to some random location. Okay, I deleted it, re-added the photo a couple of times, and then suddenly it would stretch just like it was supposed to. Okay, so far so good. Okay, it was kind of a hassle, but at least I'm making progress. Then I had to do some minor editing on the audio file. No big deal, right? Just edit that bad stuff out. But then I happened to scan through the file. I just kind of grabbed the scrubber and, you know, slid back and forth through it. And suddenly the picture, the logo, it's all messed up partway through. Sort of like massive digital breakup going on there. Okay, start over, bring in the photo, have the same problem getting it to stretch out. Fiddle, 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 fiddle. Finally, I fiddled with it enough to get it to work. Rinse and repeat with the ending video. Okay, now I got to export the movies, the files from iMovie. So I've spent a fair amount of time working with video, so, you know, I'm quite this specialist on this whole thing, right? You know, all my transcoding and everything I've done with Martin's help. Okay, that's a joke, kids. I stink at this. But I did know enough to size the movie to the same size as Bart's video so I could get those two to stitch together correctly. I did my trick of stitching the three videos together in QuickTime Pro, copy, pasting, and all that kind of stuff, and it worked beautifully. And then I listened to it. And the audio levels were just so out of whack. My voice was way, 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 way louder than Bart's. Bart's was way too quiet. If I could just apply the levelator to a video file, I'd have been fine. But no, that's an audio trick. So I looked online and folks were saying that Visual Hub could change audio levels. So I opened Bart's file in Visual Hub and politely asked it to increase the volume for me. Turns out you can go up to by percentage from the original recording. And I thought, okay, I'll export that to a new MP4 file suitable for iTunes. It failed. Just failed. Gave me some cryptic info in the log files that I'm sure Martin would understand. Had some kind of yup stuff going on in there, but it was beyond my so-called expertise. After fighting that for a while, I had an epiphany. I could lower my voice instead of trying to raise Bart's. That would work. So I went back to Wiretap Studio, which is one of my favorite applications now because it saved me here, and I added a special effect to it. Turns out there's a whole bunch of really cool effects you can add, some that are just silly, you know, like reverb and that kind of stuff, but some that are really useful. The one I chose was the Apple Dynamics Processor Filter. Sounds fancy, but basically it gave me a slider that let me crank down the gain on my voice so I wasn't hollering twice as loud as Bart. Now that I had my audio levels down to as low as his, guess what I get to do again? Yep, that's right. I get to import this audio back into iMovie, relay in my logo image, fight with it to get it to stretch out, have it botch up six ways to Sunday, and finally work. Then export, then back to QuickTime, then stitch them together. Oh, I was getting really tired of sitting at that point. Okay, now I pull the movie into iTunes to add the tags like podcast, skip when shuffling, adding my logo image, all the usual stuff. Upload the file to my server, write up the show notes, power wash the driveway, edit the podcast feed and feeder, hit publish, and I'm all set. Wow, that was quite an adventure. Time for a celebratory woot text over to Bart. And then I get a text back from him saying it's not working in iTunes. Oh, come on, you gotta be kidding. I've been working on this for like 4 hours. All I did was add like a minute to either end. That's all I did. 4 hours. 4 hours I've been working on it. I checked everything I could think of for probably an hour before, in desperation, I finally wrote an email over to my buddy Victor over at the Typical Mac User Podcast. I asked him what the heck else it could be that I haven't already triple checked. In about, I'd say about a minute, Victor jumps on iChat and announces he's found the problem. So I got to go to another tool here. Podcasters keep track of their downloads through various techniques, one of which is by redirecting the download through a service called PodTrack. I set that up about 2 years ago, and I never looked at it again. Little did I know that part of my redirect was declaring the file to be an MP3. All I had to do was switch that those three little numbers from MP3 to MOV, and my feed started working perfectly. Victor rocks. He is the man. You should leave this podcast right now. Right now. Just go listen to his. It's way better. Leave now. Save yourself. Okay, no, I'm just kidding. Don't leave, please. Please don't go. I'll try to do better. I'll try to be smarter. I promise. Well, anyway, the bottom line is that QuickTime Pro and Wiretap Studio are awesome programs and so worth the money. iMovie HD can do some cool stuff, but it sure was a lot harder than it should have been. Visual Hub has been a great program over the last few years, but aside from funny error messages, they kind of fell down on the job for me. I do like their error messages, though. When it fails, your choices are the two little buttons. Your choices are denial and acceptance. That's it. So anyway, if you had trouble downloading it, you may have to delete your entire feed and re-add it. I'm not sure, but it's real easy to re-add it. Just go over to the website, push the subscribe and iTunes button, and you're all set to go. Now, you thought I was just having a joyful time this weekend with this whole adventure, right? This was a really good time. But in the middle of this whole mess, we did a software update on Steve's PowerBook G4, including a little OS X update. You know, he's on Leopard, but it's been running just fine, but got to do those security updates. The whole thing went kablooey on us. I promise I won't take you through the whole gory details on this nightmare, because I already did a nightmare. But let me put it this way. It took over 24 hours before I was able to even get Steve back on the air. In the middle of this mess, his machine told us the RAM was bad, told us the disk was corrupted, it wouldn't boot from the Leopard CD. It was a mess. I mean, it claimed everything was wrong. I think it told us that the Mac had high cholesterol at one point. But in the end, I was able to beat it into submission to get it to boot from the Leopard CD. So it turned out all I had to do to fix it was to do an archive and install of Leopard, and he was back in business. Well, guess what we have to do now? Run software update to bring it up to speed. I'm sure it's going to go just fine. Thank you, Apple. Really enjoyed that adventure. Well, listener David wrote in today knocking off two homework assignments. He has officially claimed all of Asia as our second to last continent to be claimed. And since he's in Japan, he wrote in to tell us how to pronounce Nikon. Remember last week, Bart and I were debating how to say it. Was it Nikon or was it Nikon? Well, here's David's letter. I've been listening to your podcast here in Japan for the last couple of months, and I've been really enjoying them. Regarding the Nikon pronunciation homework assignment, in Japanese, it would sound something like Nikon. If you're, or let's see, he says slash N-I-K-O-N slash if you prefer. So Nikon. He says, of course, since I'm an American, I pronounce it the same way you do when I'm talking English. Keep up the great work. Well, I'm glad we got all that cleared up. David started a big discussion with Bart and I about Bart's pronunciation of the letter H, but I'm going to hold those until maybe a later date. Bart and he have gone off into this whole linguistics thing. It's pretty funny. Well, I sure hope that you guys all headed over to Views from the Coop, the Views from the Coop podcast when I was on the show a few weeks back. Paige is such a tease. She cuts the show in half and gives you the second half later. Well, anyway, the second half is finally posted. She and Kim also concluded their entire series on the browser wars, hopefully answering the question of who's winning. You should go check that out. Speaking of checking that out, I've also become a regular, it seems, on the Mac Roundtable. We're having a ball on there over there with our rotating cast. You never know who's going to be on the show. So go check it out at macroundtable.com. Well, I love technology, and I love the web. You put those two together, you can solve any problem. So this week, my son Kyle's iPhone got all messed up. The accelerometer in it stopped reacting to rotating the phone. The web browser was locked in landscape mode, which I guess is good because it's easier to read things, but photos were stuck in portrait mode. No matter what you did, you couldn't get it to rotate back. We tried restarting it, resetting it, pushed every button, held things down, middle, top button, the whole thing. Well, I searched all over Apple support pages, and I found zero help. Then I searched the Apple forums, which are usually quite good, but I didn't even find anybody talking about the topic. Finally, I started doing random searches on the web, and I came across the forums at hackintosh.org/forum. Now, that's a hard one to spell because the O in Hackintosh is a zero. Anyway, of course, as always, there's links in the show notes. Anyway, over on hackintosh.org/forum, there were some folks chatting about the same exact problem. But here's the best part. This guy named Safir wrote, quote, "Have you guys tried smacking your iPhones? Well, I haven't tried this fix. It has been used to fix accelerometers on Wiimotes. So it doesn't hurt to try with the iPhone accelerometers, right?" Well, I love what Kaiser wrote back. He replied, "Wow, I cannot believe my eyes. I was about to flame your last post for thinking it was so silly when I thought, well, geez, why not? And I smacked my iPhone 3 times, just like the website worked and it said, and it worked. Whee! I'm so happy now I could go kiss my mom. Thanks, man. Really." Well, I sent the info to Kyle, and guess what? It worked. Shockingly, Kyle did not kiss his mother for this, but you know how he is. He smacked his iPhone, and it worked perfectly. He did at least go so far as to look up how the accelerometer works, and he read that it's made of silicon. I did a little more research. It turns out it's a small beam of silicon with weights on it. But I'm not sure how the heck it would get stuck and how smacking it would do anything other than confuse it completely or knock the little teeny weight off the little teeny beam. But in any case, I love the internet because of people who share information on it and who help us out in our times of crisis. And I love technology because sometimes you just have to smack it around. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How are you doing today, Bart?
I'm doing very well. I just finished mowing the lawn for the first time this year. So officially that means summer has begun in my head anyway.
So it was a warm, sunny day there in Ireland finally?
Half right. It was sunny, that's for sure. But it was bloody cold and there's snow forecast for tomorrow and there was hailstones today. But I've mowed the grass there for its summer.
Hailstones?
Yeah, they're actually quite big. Yeah, quite big. Quite hurty.
You know? I like your definition of summer.
Yeah, no, if I have to cut the grass, it's summer, and when I don't have to cut the grass, it's winter. And that's how the year gets divided into two.
Well, we all have to have our own criteria, I guess. Well, let's see, we have a full agenda today. You were telling me that you actually got to play around with Vista this week, and I'm sure that was an exciting experience.
It was an experience. It certainly confirmed a few things in my mind that I'm certainly not missing anything, apart maybe from migraine, headaches, and general stress. No, my littlest brother, is handing in his undergraduate thesis yesterday, which makes me feel very old when my littlest brother, who's way younger than me, is finishing up in university. But he had to print it out, and I have a good laser printer, and he has an inkjet printer, and I don't think theses are very well suited to being printed out on inkjet printers. It's sort of expensive and slow. So I said, bring your laptop over. My printer's networked. It's, straightforward. I said, bring your laptop over. I'll put you on the network and just print. I mean, it sounds simple, right?
Okay.
No. So after, I couldn't really find where, I went into the control panel. It didn't see printers anywhere. So I went, hang on, this thing has a spotlight-like thing. So I typed in printers there and I found the printer dialog. I don't know where it hides otherwise, but I get it by typing printers. So, okay, that was good. Went add. And it went, would you like a local printer or a network printer? I said, okay, so far so good. I clicked network printer, had a good long look around, and promptly didn't see it. I said, right. So then I went, okay, maybe if I install the driver. No, at that point I said, right, I have a solution. So I ran upstairs to my Mac, which could see the printer instantly the moment I plugged it in. I think we talked about that printer when I bought it first, and I remember saying how great it was, that literally I plugged it into the network, went upstairs, and the Mac could see it straight away. No drivers were installed, it just worked. Right. So I shared it out from my Mac. So at this point we have a network printer being shared from my Mac. So Stephen's laptop was downstairs, so he was printing to my Mac Mini upstairs, which was printing back through the network down to the network printer, which was about 2 feet from Stephen. It worked, right? But it was slow.
Oh, and I couldn't
print in duplex because I was Windows hadn't got any driver for that printer. So I told it to use a generic PostScript driver. After I tried to download a driver from HP site, and then that driver would only work if the printer was plugged in over USB. It wouldn't work through the network, and that made me a bit grumpy as well, actually, on HP's behalf. So, you know, what was the most trivially simple thing on the Mac, literally, I plugged it into the network, I went upstairs and I printed, and it just worked, was a complete and utter nightmare on Vista that never really got solved, and we ended up using a hack of printing using a generic PostScript driver to a Mac upstairs to print through the network again to the network printer downstairs. It was slow as well.
So other than being slow, difficult, and time-consuming, it was a good experience.
Well, yes and no. My brother didn't get Office. He got Microsoft Works, which is such an oxymoron. And every time he reprints the document, it puts the page numbers differently. You save it. Yeah, you save it and you open it again, and it's decided that the page break should be in different places. So we printed out 3 copies of his thesis. He read where all the page breaks were, did up his table of contents, printed that out. So he was fine. He was good to go. But then the next day he said, I want to print out an extra copy. And all the page numbers had changed because Microsoft Works had decided that, what the hell, I'll reorganize it for you. I'm sure that's what you wanted.
Oh, you're joking.
No. So apparently that's par for the course with Microsoft Works. So my favorite line is, Microsoft Works doesn't.
Exactly. Well, I spent probably the last 3 days of this week on one problem. I was trying to load a virtual machine. I want to put, believe it or not, I want to put XP on top of a virtual machine on top of my Vista machine at work. So my idea was I wanted to go get VMware, and it turns out they have a thing called VMware Server, which is free. You can download that and install it, and you slap your virtual machines on there. 3 days and 3 guys who are really, really good at VMware and really, really good at Windows could not get it to run yet. I mean,
Like it should be trivial.
And they swear that on their machines it is trivial. I mean, the one guy simply declared, okay, the server will not run on this machine. Start over, do the test run, the 15-day trial run of Workstation, because that's not that much money. It's under $100. You know, we'll put that on your machine. As of when I left Friday night, that wouldn't work either. Now, the only thing that's possible is that there's something wrong with the virtual machine I got from this other guy, and maybe that's part of the problem. But, I mean, it was comical. I've installed and reinstalled it on Vista at least 6 times. To uninstall it, I have to reboot. To reinstall it, I have to reboot.
Does not sound particularly pleasant.
Yeah.
No, VMware Server, we use it in work. It just works on Linux. Hmm. We don't use it on Windows. We don't believe in Windows servers. Well, we believe they exist, but we don't want any.
Exactly. Well, some of the work I do, I'm trying to do screencasts for at work to explain how to do different things, and there's some things I need to explain on. Everybody else is using XP, so I need to be able to show it on XP. And I also found out some of the web stuff I was doing looks horrible on IE6 and renders perfectly well on IE7. So I didn't realize I was botching things up. So I really do need another OS to test it against. So. But back on your brother's problem, why is he using Microsoft doesn't work, and instead, why doesn't he use something like OpenOffice or what we have, NeoOffice on the Mac?
I have no idea. I didn't quite fathom that particular part of his genius. Because I installed OpenOffice for him, and OpenOffice on Windows works pretty damn well. Mm-hmm. But he decided he wanted to have as little as possible problem with doc format, because he wanted to be using something that could write it natively. So I guess he figured that Microsoft might be able to handle their own format better than OpenOffice might.
Hmm.
But he doesn't seem to have been correct in that assumption anyway, whatever his reasoning was. Oh, he had to use EndNote. I think that's why he had to use a Microsoft product.
Oh, wow. Well, I actually had a problem with OpenOffice just this week. Somebody sent me a form. Just to be belligerent, I use OpenOffice on Vista. I have Microsoft Office, but I just use OpenOffice just to be obnoxious. And I got this form where they had created little fields, and I don't know exactly how you make these fields, but where, you know, you have to type in them and to answer all these questions. And I found in OpenOffice, when you clicked on them, it actually opened up a window that you then had to type in, which was really annoying instead of just typing on the form. But I worked through the whole form and I finished it, and then there was some reason I decided to open it in Word. I don't even remember why. And when I went to open it in Word, they were all botched up. Wherever there was a space, there were two question marks instead. And so in some cases, there were four or five sets of question marks in a row. And the whole thing was garbage. I had to start over. So luckily, I happened to have looked at it in Word before I actually mailed it to this person, because they would have been pretty irate with me, I think.
Yeah, well, but if they don't need to edit it, they should have just got a PDF. That's my theory. You only use Word when someone has to be able to edit it on the other end. If they don't, PDF it.
Yeah, and I have PDF Creator on my Vista box, and I have yet to figure out how to make it create a PDF.
There's a free way to make PDFs on Windows out of anything. Well, pretty much anything.
What's that?
It's a free and open source print driver whose name escapes me right now. But basically, you install it as a printer, and anything you can print, you can turn into a PDF. You go File, Print, pick that print driver, it'll pop up asking you for a file name, out will come a PDF.
Great. Well, between now and when I do the show notes, maybe the name will come to you, and we'll stick it in the show notes.
I have it written down at work, because I'm a bit of a PDF pusher in work, because I get very grumpy when people send around giant big doc files for no good reason, when really they should be either plain text or TF or PDF, but they certainly shouldn't be doc files.
Right, right. Or they should have written it in a wiki.
Well, yeah, there's a million and one things they should have done, but emailed me a Word document wasn't on the list.
Well, let's see. You've started playing around more with NeoOffice and Leopard, which is the open source equivalent of, or the equivalent for the Mac of OpenOffice. What are you thinking about that?
I had to write someone a reference this week, and so I do almost no word processing. I hate it, and I don't like doing it. But I have Office, the old Office 2004 for the Mac on my machine, and it's just a bit ick. It's really the only word for it. It's a bit ick. So
except
I said, "What
for
the
Excel.
Hell?"
Excel is nice.
I don't like the interface. I don't like it. I just think it's ick. It makes silly noises on the Mac version that drive me mental. So I said, what the hey, I'm going to install NeoOffice. So I did, and that was fine. It did its usual annoying trick of, here you go, here's the latest download. The first time around, oh, by the by, here's this patch we probably should have given you as well, but we didn't. So download, then patch. Okay, so two downloads instead of one. Anyway, up and running, all good. Fired up my reference, started typing. Got through the entire thing without a single spelling mistake. And I thought, I can't be right. I can't type that well.
I don't think you've done a five-minute chat conversation without a typo, have you?
Exactly. I don't think I've done a one-minute chat conversation without a typo. So I thought, there's something wrong here. And I noticed that there was a HTIS and all sorts of stuff all over the place. And I thought, right, something wrong here. So I looked up at the menu bar, and the little button for spell check as you type, it was on with a little squiggly line underneath it. So it thought it was spell checking, but it wasn't. So I went, okay, fair enough. So I clicked the button next to it, the spell check now for real button. And it went, yeah, that's it. Your document's fully checked. Didn't find anything. I was like, there's a HTIS in there. And loads of other stuff. So I ended up selecting the whole lot, copying it into a sticky, running spell check on the sticky because it's a standard Coca thingy, so it has spell check for free. Then copying and pasting it back into NeoOffice, which is probably a bit silly, but it did work.
Now, since you told me that you had that problem, I launched NeoOffice just now, and I started misspelling words on purpose, and the little squiggly lines showed up under the words, and I'm on Leopard too.
Yeah, but I'm in Ireland, and my computer is set up. No, my computer is set up with an Irish locale.
Okay.
And I think that has Leopard. Actual Coca apps deal with this fact that I'm in Ireland without a problem at all. They deal with it flawlessly. Any Coca app knows what dictionary to apply, that color has a U in it, and so on and so forth.
Why don't you just speak proper English like we do?
I think historically we're closer to the mark, but anyway. I've had trouble on and off. I've been using the Office for years, and one version will spell check and the next version won't, and then one version will and then one version won't. And I'm just thinking it's a very poor show at this stage of the game that if you're not in the US, you don't seem to get spell checking in any sort of reliable way. And I'm sorry, but that's not good enough. That's poor show.
No, are you saying so you're saying you have the language set to British English? Is that what you've done?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you haven't told it Irish English. It's the answer, the option is British English, right?
Yeah, Mac gives you, I think it's American English, British English, Canadian English, and Australian English. I think they're your Englishes.
Now,
so British English is appropriate.
Now, is that in the Mac or in OS X, or you did that inside New Office?
I did it in OS X.
Because New Office, maybe it doesn't, maybe that's not set.
Well, when I went into the options for spell checking, it said I was in English in brackets ERA, which is the Irish for Ireland.
Oh.
It said spell checking was turned on, and it said it was happy to have an English or an Irish, an Irish English, if that makes any sense, dictionary. So it thought it was spell checking just fine, and everything was checked, and it thought it had a dictionary.
Huh.
But it doesn't.
That's weird.
Yeah, and I'm used to spell check just working because, let's face it, it's there for free on the Mac. Coca does it for you. So to get it wrong takes an effort.
I wonder if there's something else going wrong. I just tried changing mine to British English, and I typed color the way we spell it, C-O-L-O-R, and it came back and said you spelled it wrong. And the option it offered was C-O-L-O-U-R.
Which would be appropriate. Yeah, I did a basic install, out of the box, didn't change anything, spell check didn't work, spent a couple of minutes trying to make it work, couldn't make it work. I've had enough. Like, I think that's just ridiculous. Then, I mean, the thing is still so bloated. Like, it takes forever to load up, especially on a G4. It's still bloated. It's still slow. It's still buggy. It doesn't deal with spaces at all, which I think is a poor show at this stage of the game.
And by spaces, you don't mean hitting the space bar. You mean flying back and forth between windows?
Yeah, if I had it in space 1 and I had something else in space 2, and when I was in space 2, I clicked on Neo Office in the dark and nothing happened. It wouldn't swing over to space 1. Apple tabbed to it, nothing happened. So I actually had to manually change to space 1 to see my my Neo Office again.
That's not good.
Yep. No, it's just very poor. So I'm hopeful because the actual Open Office guys are doing an Open Office native Mac port.
Oh, that's about
so
time.
So I'm hoping that they manage to do it right because the Neo Office guys haven't.
Now, I hate to say something good about Microsoft, but when you're in Microsoft Office, you separately launch Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. But when you're in OpenOffice, or in NeoOffice at least, you open all of the applications at the same time. I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons it feels so bloated.
Possibly, but I don't know. There's a lot of funny business going on there to try sort of hack its way into OS X. I have a feeling there's an awful lot of Java under the hood, which probably shouldn't be there. It's sort of a strange hack to make it fit into OS X, so I'm hoping that when the actual OpenOffice guys do it, they do it a little more sensibly. I suppose only time will tell. I think they're coming close to a beta or an alpha anyway, so with any luck, this time next year the problem won't exist. But I was just unimpressed, because NeoOffice has been out for years, and when it first came out, it was unpolished, and I didn't care because it was new and it was cool. But it's been out for years now, and it's still unpolished, and that's a bit poor.
Yeah,
I can forgive new apps being unpolished, but once you go beyond your version 1s into your version 2s and beyond, there's no excuse for not getting it right.
I still am glad there's an option for us, though. I recommend a lot of times to people try NeoOffice first, and if it works for you, just, move on with your life. Why give Microsoft another $150 for the home version of Office?
Oh, it's certainly better than nothing. So if you need something free that actually is usable, and I don't mean that in terms of being usability brilliant, I mean it in terms of it will work, then yeah, NeoOffice is a good option, and I'm glad it's there. But I'm just disappointed and a little jaded with it right now.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Well, what else have you been playing with this week?
Then Microsoft annoyed me again this week. They were on a roll altogether. In work, I have a G5. It's a dual G5, 2.5 gigs of RAM. It's an absolute rocket of a machine. The thing's almost 3 years old, but I don't come anywhere near pushing it to its limits. It's a fabulous machine, but it's not Intel. So I can't run something like Parallels or any of that kind of stuff on it to run Windows. Even though I have the RAM, I have the CPU, it would work fine, but not on a G5. And our call tracking system in work is Windows only. It's terrible, it's useless, but it's all we have. So I need to get at Windows. And the way I do that is I have, for testing purposes, I have a crappy old Dell GX150 in the corner, and that runs XP, and it runs the call tracking service. And so I use our Microsoft's remote desktop protocol, or RDP, to connect to it. So I just get a little window in my Mac that is the Windows box. And it works fabulously. I can copy and paste between them. Works like a charm.
Now, I've always liked RDP. Was just, you know, in some ways I like it better than running Parallels because it's so much faster to jump onto an existing box that's already booted up.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's fabulous. Although in my case, my existing box is a very old and very knackered Dell, so it's not all that snappy. But that's the fault of the machine I'm going to rather than the protocol. No, it works fantastically well. Now, the Microsoft client on the Mac, the version 1 client could only do one machine at a time, and that was annoying. And then the version 2 client made a whole big deal out of the fact that it could do multiple sessions at once. But it could only do that if you saved the sessions as .rdp files and then opened them separately. So it was very messy. You couldn't just say, give me a new connection. You had to open an existing connection. It was awfully messy. But nonetheless, it was a step forward. So I was using the beta client and have been for quite some time. And on the 1st of April, I went to use it and it popped me up a little message. And I'll read out what the message said. This beta version of a remote desk client is out of date. You are using beta version of Remote Desktop Connection Client for Mac 2.0. We recommend upgrading to the final release version. You can download the latest version of RDC at, and it gives a URL. So what does that imply to you?
That implies that they have a new version out.
It does, doesn't it?
That
so
it's been
released. I click download latest version, which takes me not to the RDP page, but to the MacBoo homepage. So microsoft.com/Mac. So there's a whole bunch of downloads there. One of them was labeled latest patch or something, and I thought, ah, great, I'll grab that. Which, of course, turned out to be a patch for Office. Office 2008, as it happens.
Oh, you're so I thought, kidding.
Okay. Right, I've just been confused here. I've been silly. So I started reading around the site more. It's an awful lot of black, very emo for Microsoft. And I noticed there was an RDP button in the header. So I went, oh, how's about I click that? So I clicked that and scrolled down to the bottom of the page, got the download, downloaded it, installed it, fired up the client and got exactly the same message. I was like, what? Turns out I downloaded exactly what I had before. There is no new version.
Oh, you're kidding me.
The beta just expired and Microsoft hard-coded in the fact that obviously there would be a new version when the beta expires. So there's nothing to download. So if you do exactly what it says, you just keep going around in circles forever and ever and ever. So there is a button saying continue using beta, but basically Microsoft had just added an ag screen and it wasn't that great a product really because I couldn't have multiple sessions easily. And the nag screen just annoyed me. So I went on the hunt for an alternative. And I found one. A free SourceForge product called Cord. Capital C, small O, capital R, capital D. And it basically has a little pane down the side where you can have all your favorite servers. You can have as many sessions as you like. You just click on a server and off you go. And it's just been working like a charm. It's snappier, it's quicker. And I actually have to say the beta version of Microsoft's client was crashing on me quite a bit. The Cord only crashed once in the week, whereas the Microsoft one would have crashed 5 or 6 times in a week. So they both crash, but less often for Cord. And it's still a very low version number. I don't remember it off the top of my head. So there's a lot of hope for that product. And free open source from SourceForge. So, you know, I was really happy with it. The only really, really, really tiny thing is that the Microsoft client has a cuter logo.
You know, that is an important part, you know.
It is. The logo for Cord was quite clearly an Apple Cinema display with the Windows icon only, it's all black. So it's those four slanty windows, mm-hmm. but they're all in black instead of in the shiny Microsoft colors. It almost looks like, you know, Microsoft has died or something. There's some sort of funeral going on or something. It's a bit drab and icky looking, whereas the Microsoft one has a normal monitor with the colorful Windows logo and a little satellite dish so that you're sort of beaming into your other client, which is kind of cool. But as I say, I do like my icons, but I'm not going to actually use a less good product just because it has a cooler icon.
I do anyway, remember so when I switched from CyberDuck over to Transmit, and while the Transmit truck is nice, I really like the duck. But, you know, I did end up going with what I thought was a better product at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. The little ducky's so cool. But
cool.
I have my duck quotient now that I have Adium.
Yeah, that's good.
Although it's not rubber. But no, the little Transmit truck is cute as well.
It's not bad.
But yeah, it's... yeah, it's a fantastic, it's cheap and cheerful little client. I don't remember the size of the download, but it wasn't big at all. It just works. So Cord gets my thumbs up. Microsoft made me grumpy this week twice.
Twice is too often to be grumpy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Definitely. Well, I think that's probably enough for this week. I'm going to be off next week. I'm going to be out of pocket. I'm going to be on a little 3-day cruise to Mexico.
Can you get there and back in 3 days?
Yeah, well, Mexico's only 2 hours away, about 3 hours away by car. So, yeah, you can definitely get to Mexico quickly from L.A. We'll actually go, it goes down to Ensenada, and then we go over to Catalina for a day, which is part of the U.S., and then back home. So,
do you get on the boat near home, or do you have to drive to get on the boat?
Pretty close to home, down in Long Beach, which is maybe 20, 30 minutes away. And then
it's going to sail down the coast, down to Mexico.
Right. I wouldn't call
Turn
it
around
a
and sail.
Sail. Being a sailor, I'd call it motorboat down. But I've never been on an official real cruise before. And the comedy is Lindsay really, really, really always wanted us to go on a cruise, and I would never go, and she can't go. My friend Diane kept trying to get us to go on cruises for years, and I always refused to go, so now I'm going without either one of them. But I'm going with the entire track team. Well, not the entire track team, about 11 kids from the track and cross-country team, and the parents are just a whole bunch of fun. I'm really, really looking forward to it. But I do
Sounds
believe,
fabulous.
Yeah, it should be nice. It's probably not going to be that warm, but good company and a lot of fun. So I don't think I'm going to have internet access for about 2 of the 3 days, so that's going to be a little rugged for me.
Oh no, withdrawal symptoms kicking in there.
I'll be suffering, and don't you tell me to get a life, right?
Although you did manage to survive on that Caribbean cruise a few years ago.
Yeah, I did kind of warm up to the not doing anything at all for a few days, but it's not a habit I want to get into, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'll be able to talk to you next weekend anyway, so with that, I think I'm going to sign us off.
Okie dokie. Until next time, happy computing.
Well, that's going to wind it up for this week's show. I had a lot of fun. I actually did it with a live audience. I was streaming over Ustream. I don't know if I'll keep doing this, but my poor little 2.5-year-old MacBook Pro actually continued to do Ustream and GarageBand at the same time. And let's see, at 97-95% of my processor. So we put it through its paces today, but it was a lot of fun having a bunch of people watch and do a little chatting in between segments. This coming week, I'm going to be on a little cruise to Mexico with little or no interweb access. So I'm not sure how much I'll be able to do on the show during the week, but luckily, quite a few people sent in some material that's going to help beef up the show for next week. Keep all the great emails coming. You know how much I love to hear from you. Send your comments and suggestions and reviews on over to Allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.